It's time for a solid hour of business insights and strategies for success on Mind Your Business. And here's your host, the president and founder of Bottom Line Marketing, Yitzhak Saflis.
You're tuned to another edition of Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC in the New York, New Jersey metro area and worldwide at WABCBizRadio.com and, of course, on the 77 WABC app. And, of course, now at 10 p.m., we moved up an hour. This radio show, Mind Your Business, on the legendary 77 WABC is all about you. Every single week, we seek out and interview C-level executives and business leaders from all types of industries and ask them the questions that are on your mind. Gain business advice and strategies on so many professions and business categories, including sales, social media, corporate culture, emerging technologies, leadership, strategic planning, entrepreneurship, financial planning, time management, hiring, customer retention, and so much more. Stay tuned for tonight's edition of Mind Your Business, where you'll gain solid business advice and strategies to get you ahead in today's business world. Special thank you, as we do each week, to Pesach Trapper, the show's producer, and to the great team at Bottom Line Marketing Group, who plays an important support role, Rena, Srilly, Miriam, Ellie, Dina. Thank you. And, of course, to the great team here at 77 WABC, Jose, Matt, Chris, Brian, Justin. Thank you. And, of course, I'd like to give a special mention to the various channels that Mind Your Business is syndicated on. Mishpacha Magazine, the monthly Take 5 column. We've already featured episodes from John Scully, David Colby, Christine Comerford, Yossi Heber. All subscribers of Mishpacha get it, and you could always pick it up on your newsstand. We're also on C-Suite Radio, Audio Boom, iTunes, YouTube. Tonight's edition will be up on YouTube. And, actually, it's going to be a special edition on C-Suite TV. The other episodes we have up is Dawn Fay, District President of Robert Half. It's up there on C-Suite TV. All episodes are available at WABCBizRadio.com, WABCBizRadio.com. Also, I'm on social media, all the various platforms, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Yitzhak Saflis, you'll find me. I think I'm the only Yitzhak Saflis in America. So that helps. Also, a special thank you to some of our recent guests, John Scully, former CEO of Apple and Pepsi. That was a great interview. It's up on the archives. Joe Hart, president and CEO of Dale Carnegie. Shep Hyken, world-renowned customer service expert. Paul Massey of Cushman Wakefield is running for mayor. Steven Sato, former CEO of Saks Fifth Avenue. Chris McCann, CEO of 1-800-Flowers. Captain Sully Sullenberger. The list goes on. They're all available by going to WABCBizRadio.com, WABCBizRadio.com. Without further ado, getting to a very special guest. I have to be honest, I ran after him. And you'll know why in a few minutes. It's Sam Walker of the Wall Street Journal. Some background about a very distinguished guest. Sam founded the Wall Street Journal's award-winning sports section. That's a story in and of itself. Then Sam is the deputy editor of the Wall Street Journal's enterprise section, which oversees many of the items on the front page of every single edition. Sam's new book is the reason why he's here. Not that the other ones are not important, but we're going to be talking a lot about the captain class, the driving force behind the world's greatest teams. Therefore, we encourage you to stay tuned for tonight's edition of Mind Your Business, where we will discuss how Sam founded the award-winning sports section of the Wall Street Journal and the makings of successful teams and leaders. With that intro, we give a warm welcome to Sam Walker. Sam, how are you today?
I'm great. Thanks, Yitzhak, for having me on.
I can't thank you enough. Now, I mean, let's go down memory lane for just at the beginning here. Tell us about yourself. You're the deputy editor of the enterprise section, Wall Street Journal. You founded the sports section. How did this all happen?
Well, you know, it's a little bit of an accident that I wound up getting into sports writing. I didn't pursue it immediately. Okay. In fact, I started covering politics. And I covered Congress in Washington for some time. And then, you know, I got this weird assignment to go cover the Super Bowl.
And this is a weird assignment.
Well, I mean, it was weird because I was a political reporter at the time. But I went there, and this was the year, I think, Brett Favre, you know, won. Mm-hmm. And this was 97. And it was just such a great time. And I started to really love sports writing. And I started to think the writing is so much fun. It can be a lot more colorful. I'd gotten a little tired of Washington, and so I dove into it. And, you know, I wound up coming to the Journal and writing for the Weekend Journal and writing about sports early on.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a column and I had a great time. It's a little, we always covered sports a little bit differently than most publications, which I thought was fun. And then things proceeded from there. When News Corp came in and bought the Journal, they wanted to make it more of a general interest publication. And sports is something they've always had a corporate fondness for. And the editor at the time, Robert Thompson, is a massive sports fan. So it all just started happening. You know, at the time, we had a small staff. I had maybe three people covering sports and just wrote kind of whenever. And they said to me at one point, like, we're going to start a sports page. And I said, terrific. And it's going to be a daily page. I was like, great. I mean, when are we going to launch this? They're like, 1 month. So,
wow. Like, boom.
It was really like
hit the ground running fast. What year was that?
That was 2009 when we actually launched it. And the funny story, we launched this page, and I think it was March 3rd, and I think March 5 was the absolute bottom of the stock market. So it was grim days and a tough time in the industry, and here we were starting something new, and we were hiring. It was a very weird place to be. But, you know, we had a different philosophy about how to cover sports, and I think that's what made the section unique.
You're the deputy editor of the Enterprise department, which, of, as we mentioned, covers the front cover of the, no pun intended there, but you that's what you address there. That must be crazy pressure. That comes down to the wire, as they're moving around the page. It depends on the news. It depends on a lot of factors. And some of those articles are research. They're not necessarily time relevant. They could run on a Monday or a Tuesday, whenever you decide to put it. How's that dynamic? I know this is going off the sports for a moment.
Fine. No. Well, last year they approached me about this job, and I'd been sports editor for about 8 years, and it was terrific, but I was ready for a new challenge. And this was right when the presidential election sort of started to become
big news.
And ever since I've been in the job, it's just been like hitching a ride on a comet. I mean, it's crazy. I didn't know what I was getting into. It's been the craziest news cycle ever. I mean, there have been days where, we had so much news happening. I remember one day on a Sunday when we have to take turns, being the one person running the front page on Sunday. And it was a Sunday. There was so much news. It was the Republican convention. There was Nice.
Right.
There was a shoot. Yeah. So we wound up leaving. I think we left the Nice attack off the front page that day because there was so much other news.
Wow. Even that I was never unfortunate. Seen such
like
a, yeah,
it was
yeah.
terrible. And it deserved to be at the top of the front page. But there was so much going on. But it's a terrific thing. The Journal's a little different than other newspapers, and it's always had this a separate page one unit,
right,
which runs the coverage. And this comes back from the old days when the Journal had basically three page one stories. And now we have many, and we do a lot more breaking news, so it's changed a bit. But the unit I'm in is that unit. So the stories that would run on the left and right rail were very deeply reported, long, intensely researched stories.
But they always stay in the A, or sometimes they would even do, I mean, at this point, they would still always jump to the A. They're not jumping into B or...
They still jump into A. And they were called leaders in journal speak. And the story that you'll see every day that has all caps headline style, that's the
the new FDA lobby or correct
right that those and are the those are the pieces.
What is this one called?
That's called the A-head, and the A-head is one of my favorite things. It's the most journal quirky thing, but so the story is great. So back in 1941, we had this famous editor named Barney Kilgore, who was the kind of the architect of the modern journal, is someone we all revere. He, in 1941, I mean, you can imagine what the news was like.
Yeah.
The news was terrible. He decided that every day they were going to write a feature on the front page that was light and funny and quirky, maybe a little weird, so everyone could have a laugh.
Right.
And, it's funny because it's been on the front page ever since. And it's had its ups and downs, but what we've discovered is that in this news environment now, where everything's so serious, these things are just seeing this incredible surge in popularity. I think people want a little bit of a laugh.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. People need a little bit of that. I mean,
yeah.
Now, the Wall Street Journal obviously is renowned for being, you know, the leading business-focused publication. Question is, you know, what the road that you even mentioned that the, you know, the administration agreed to say, hey, you know what? You know, fine, we're not going to be Sports Illustrated or whatever it is. We understand it's still a business publication, but it seems you didn't have to fight your way in for this one. It wasn't like, yeah, like it was handed to you. I mean, it's a fascinating story of itself that such a leading business publication has a great sports section.
Yeah, it was funny because you'd been pushing for more sports coverage for years, not just because we wanted, you know, our scope to grow, but because the readers of the journal love sports,
right,
and they're passionate,
right,
about it. And some of the stories, right, we did got such great response and traffic. We felt like we were leaving an opportunity on the table. And, you know, frankly, the new owners really agreed with that and went sort of into it gung-ho. Now, the funny thing about it was when we started, you know, the journal is a really a national paper. I mean, it really is.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, you know, we have some really bad deadlines because we've got to get papers. You know, we have regional plants all over the country, but, you know, those papers have to get to the middle of Montana.
Still got to print.
Right. And
be distributed.
Right. And to get out there. So we have these early deadlines. So we realized quickly we weren't going to be able to cover, you know,
right here
happening
on the East. Right. You can't cover a Giants game. I'm talking about the San Francisco Giants, right, you know, and when they end at, if it goes, it goes,
yeah,
next,
no
innings
way,
at 1 a.m.
Well, we couldn't even get, you know, a lot of the New York games in the first edition. So,
wow.
So we realized we had to be different. And so we adopted a new philosophy, which was we were going to write ahead of events and try to do stories that would sort of were curtain raisers, that would be really fascinating stories ahead of what was about to happen.
Right.
And we also decided we wanted to use humor. I feel like the sports pages are so earnest and serious and reverential. So we really wanted to try some funny things. And the main thing was we just didn't want to be predictable. And we would do a ridiculous, funny, silly thing one day. We would do a serious investigation the next day. We would do a kind of a news piece. I mean, we would just keep mixing it up. And the reader response was just terrific. And we wound up getting some great writers and getting really fortunate. And some of the stuff we did, and I'm really proud of the fact that we not only won all kinds of prizes for investigative reporting, especially about Lance Armstrong's, you know, we were really in the lead on that story for years. And but we also, you know, we have humor columnists. We have Jason Gay, who's a great read.
And
so we kind of cover the waterfront.
Well, was it him? Who was it? Remember the Mets pitcher that had an issue? He was going down because he didn't go to the bathroom. I remember the way you covered it. It was hilarious. Something like, you know, when you gotta go, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, but, no,
you know,
they
had that, yeah, spin. I mean, all the time, but it just you know what else I'm enjoying about this? There's a human side to this. You know, people pick up a paper and there are hundreds of people that are putting in time and, you know, not just the graphics, you know, the research and the writing and the team and, of course, the printing and the distribution.
Right.
It's mammoth.
Yeah, it's a team. It really is a team effort. And the thing I love about newspapers is that it really is a collective process. And I really love teams. It's one of the reasons I wrote this book about teams,
yes,
because I've always been fascinated by them and how they work and the dynamics behind them. And it's hard. Newspapers are really wear you down sometimes, but then there are those moments where you break some huge story or something goes bananas and you know that
you were at the center of it.
We all did it, right? It wasn't,
yeah,
just one person. Everyone is. It's like collective. The feeling of a great collective win is so much better than the feeling of an individual win. And it's hard
nice
to walk
away
from.
And that's what your book's about. Before we get to our first break, I just wanted to ask, do you travel around the world for some of the, like, did you go to Brazil?
No, I went all over the place to report this book. I mean, I'd done a fair amount of traveling for the journal when I was a writer. And, you know, we'll go to the Olympics and do things like that. But for this book in particular, I think I went to 12 different countries.
Wow.
I mean, and interviewed people and found these teams that I didn't know anything about until I immersed myself in.
My guest this evening is Sam Walker. A lot of accolades, but we're going to be talking about his brand new book. It's a Penguin Random House release. It's called The Captain Class, the hidden force that creates the world's greatest teams. Now, Sam and Penguin were kind enough for the listeners. One lucky listener is going to win a hardcover edition of this brand new book. You could, to enter, it's very simple. All you have to do is send a text to 64600 and put in the letters MYB for Mind Your Business. It's that simple. Put in those, again, send it over to 64600, put in the letters MYB, and great news. If it turns out you didn't win, the book is available. Of course, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, around the world, this book is available, The Captain Class, The Hidden Force That Creates the World's Greatest Teams by Sam Walker. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Your company website is crucial to your success, providing information about your company to the entire world. Was your website recently updated? Is it mobile-friendly? Well, look no further than websitewithbrains.com, the complete website solution. Call Website with Brains today at 718-412-3500. That's 718-412-3500. Or visit websitewithbrains.com. The experienced team at Website with Brains will plan, write, design, and program a stunning and informative website that combines simplicity and flexibility. Get ready to look great online and take your business to the next level. Call Website with Brains today at 718-412-3500. That's 718-412-3500.
Since 1848, the quality of Herzog wines has been appreciated by royalty as well as those who aspire to it. Located in its state-of-the-art winery in Oxnard, California, the Herzog family produces a wide range of wines combining old-world value and new-world technology. These wines have made Herzog Wine Cellars the most award-winning kosher winery in the world.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saftlis right here on 77 WABC. My guest this evening is none other than Sam Walker. He founded the Wall Street Journal's sports section, and he came out with this brand new release, a Random House release, The Captain Class, The Hidden Force That Creates the World's Greatest Teams. Before we get to the book, Sam, any other last-minute stories about, you know, working at the Wall Street Journal? I mean, you know, I would imagine everyone there is in a, you know, in a tie, and, you know, I mean, and you're doing sports. I mean, do you come in a T-shirt? What are you doing, sneakers? I mean, like, how does it work?
Well, there were so few of us, and no one had really done it before. So what we discovered, I would go to the locker room. I'd wear the sports writer outfit, you know, got a rumpled shirt and some pants, and I would tell people that I was with the Wall Street Journal. This is years ago, and they would say, "The Wall Street Journal?
What are you doing?
A sports page?" And I realized, like, they thought it was, they were so, thought it was so weird that I realized I finally started wearing a suit. So I would wear a suit, you know, and a tie, and I would go down there, and then it would make sense to them that I was there.
Will you be the only one in a suit?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. And everyone thought I was insane because it was, you know, middle of the summer and it's 90 degrees at Shea Stadium and I'm wearing a suit. So, but that definitely got people talking.
We're talking about your new book. Fascinating book. Also, special shout out to Christine Comerford, who was a guest on this on Mind Your Business. Her book, Smart Tribes. There we go. Mm-hmm. Smart Tribes. And it's a fantastic book about teams, and it's really a brilliant piece. And she tweeted about some amazing books that are coming out, and one of them was The Captain Class. And then I said to myself, I got to get Sam on the show. I mean, this is going to be really special. So what inspired you? Now, of course, you've covered sports for many years, but when was that aha moment to say that you were able to decipher and put it into this brilliant release?
Well, so it all started in 2004, and it started with the Boston Red Sox, which is a team that I spent a lot of time with that year. And I'd covered a lot of great elite sports teams, you know, all over the world, and I knew kind of how they were. They all seemed to have similar qualities. So I met the Red Sox at spring training. The Red Sox had none of these qualities. They, I mean, remember, this was the idiots. And I mean, they really were. They were fun, but they seemed undisciplined, unserious. And, you know, in July, they fell 9.5 games behind.
Yeah, there was no chance.
They were left
for
dead.
No chance.
Right? So they were done, and I just thought to myself, well, yeah, that figures. They're not like the other teams, that the great teams that I've seen in the past. So, but then August came, and something clicked, and they went on a tear, and they just started winning. But it wasn't just that they were winning. It was that they had this confidence and focus and swagger. I mean, they started to look a lot like the other great teams that I'd seen in the past. And, you know, of course, they rewrote history. I mean, they came back from three games down to beat the Yankees in the ALCS. And
impossible.
Win,
it was
and break
impossible.
The curse, right? I mean, no one's ever done anything like that. No. And, you know, after that, I think people were rightfully saying, because of the scope of their accomplishments, it's one of the great baseball teams, individual year baseball teams. So the question to me, the minute I saw this happen, I thought to myself, all right, I need to know why.
Right.
Why? What makes the transformation?
It happened, but it didn't happen by accident. It didn't happen by itself.
Yeah, it was all there. Something, there was a spark, something, you know, made them into this cohesive unit. And I'd seen this before, and I realized that I didn't know anything about these, why this happens. I knew what great teams were like, but I didn't know why they got there. So I decided that I was going to do this study, and I thought I was going to write a column for the Wall Street Journal. So I set aside a couple of weeks, and I said, I'm just going to do an objective list. Let's list all the best teams in the history of sports, and I'll figure out a way to do it objectively, empirically, and then I'll look at them all, and I'll see the moment where they made that turn to greatness, and I'll try to see if there's something similar. Was it the coach? They got a superstar. They changed their tactics. Maybe it was money. I didn't know what it would be.
Right.
So that 2 weeks, I blew through that. 2 months, blew through that. And as I sit here today, that was 11 years ago.
Right.
So this is, I mean, I've obviously had a job. It hasn't been 11 solid years of work, but it turned out to be the biggest, most engrossing, exciting, but also labor-intensive process, because I realized I couldn't just look at North American sports. I had to look at the whole world.
Right, which you cover.
Everything. I mean, if you want to really do an objective study, you have to look at every major sport in the world. And I realized, you know, it took me a long time just to collect all the teams that had ever won a championship. And there were more than 10,000 of them.
That's the number. Wow.
It was crazy. And so then I had to start filtering it down, which that was the second step.
So jumping right in, recently in a Sunday edition in the Review, they covered it. And as well they should. You have some good connections there. And I'm actually going to start to run through, and again, it's the 7 secrets of great team captains. That's the name of that article. And of course, it's all covered in the book, The Captain Class, The Hidden Force That Creates the World's Greatest Teams. It's a Penguin Random House release. Now, you start off, I'm not sure if this is the order in the book, but one of them, they took care of tough, unglamorous tasks. Now, again, we're not talking about the team itself. We're talking about the captain,
right?
The captain of the team. So that means they're basically we're willing to roll up their sleeves, get down and dirty. What do you bring out from point number one, that they took on these tough, unglamorous tasks?
Well, let me preface by saying, so after I isolated these teams, I found 16 of the greatest teams of all time. And then I started studying them and to see what they had in common. And was it the coach? Was it a superstar? What was it? And the thing that jumped right out at me were the first two teams I looked at, the Boston Celtics of the 50s and 60s and the New Zealand All Blacks rugby team from the late 90s. Was that their winning streak overlapped precisely with the arrival and departure of one player. And that player, in every case on every team, was the captain or would eventually become the captain. And I didn't believe it. It was too easy. I thought, you know, there's no way.
Was that blatant?
It was that obvious. So I went back and I looked at every other possibility, and I've outlined my process in the book and how I went about examining all this. But anyway, at the end of the day, it was the captain. But it wasn't just a captain. It was a certain kind of captain. And the thing that really blew me away was it wasn't Michael Jordan. It wasn't Derek Jeter. It wasn't the people you would think. A lot of these captains were not stars. Most of them were not. And as you just said, one of the characteristics was this willingness to do grunt work. And, you know, many of them, the majority of them were support players who played defense or played unglamorous positions on the field. They weren't leading from the front. You know, we think of leadership as taking the big shot with the game on the line, right? But they were the absolute opposite of that. They would never do anything like that. They laid the ball off to their more talented teammates.
And this was everyone, or I mean, what percentage? You're talking about 90% greater?
There were 16 teams. There were only three people who I think you could consider stars.
Wow.
The others were all defensive support players, which is amazing when you think about it.
And yeah, you think it's the cleanup hitter. It's the
yeah. Well, in this case, I mean, there's so many examples, but you know, one of my favorites. I looked at men's and women's teams, and one of the teams that I looked at was the 1999 U.S. women's soccer team, which has by far the best record in the history of that sport. And Carl, you know, everyone thinks, okay, Mia Hamm, right, Brandi Chastain, you remember the big names. But the captain was a woman named Carla Overbeck. And Carla Overbeck was just the perfect species of this kind of captain. She was a defender of average skills, she admits, all her coaches said. She was completely relentless. She never quit, but she was always on the field. But she would serve the team, not just on the field by laying the ball off to better players, but she would actually, when they took these long overseas trips and the bus pulled up at the hotel, she would carry her teammates' bags to their rooms. She served the team, and she was one of these humble people. In fact, after they won the World Cup, they had a huge rally in Times Square. They were on all the late night shows. She went home to Raleigh, North Carolina to see her family, and she was doing laundry, you know, when the rest of her teammates were taking this Star Trek. She wanted no attention. She was really not interested in individual accomplishments, but they were all like that. And that's I think a great lesson for team building, even beyond sports.
Wow. And in fact, that's one of the reasons why we seeked you out, because this show is primarily the listenership are small business owners, medium-sized business owners. Shout out to Pfizer. I know that one of the guests landed Pfizer as a client. So we attract quite a bit. But the lessons here from this book, I mean, besides it's in, you know, I just enjoy the concept, the emotional intelligence that's just that's screaming out of the pages. These as we talk about, because some, you know, it's interesting. In my interview with Captain Sullenberger, so he talked about soft skills. And if I recall correctly, his exact words were, "I bristle at people that push aside the soft skills." And he used those words because he said that the what was going on in that cockpit for 2 minutes and 8 seconds, he said it was just, he actually said this expression. He said, I think it was roughly 40 years because he was a pilot in the Air Force, 40 years of experience, life experience, was in the bank, and he was able to withdraw that in those 2 minutes to save everyone on that jet. You know, it was just like, wow. So, you know, and this book talks about these things and the winning teams that happened as a result because of these great captains.
Right.
And it's interesting, you're saying like Jeter is a great captain. We, you know, he's known as a great captain, but you're saying, again, we're not, and I saw there was some social media, some people right. beating you up. Hey guys, lay off. Sam's a good guy, you know, back off. but maybe you can explain again how you defined a great captain for the purpose of your book.
Well, Sullenberger is such a perfect example of this kind of character. And if you saw the movie, you noticed that people talk about what a hero is, and heroism, as I've discovered it with these captains, is great heroes. These captains just wanted to get it right, and if you see his reaction to this whole thing, he was being lionized. They wanted to throw him parades, but all he cared about was, did I get it right? You know, did I actually do what I should have done? Because I think that's a quality all these captains share. So okay, they're not what you expect. Okay, in any way. In fact, if you try to design a perfect sports captain in a laboratory,
right?
What would you do? You'd say,
and I love that expression.
You would take a superstar like a great superstar, like incredible freak of nature talent,
right?
And you would take some
Ozzie Smith
a Pelé, someone who's just a transcendent, and then you would say, okay, they're going to be super charismatic too. They're going to have Jordan's charisma. They're going to have. Right. They're going to be incredible celebrities. And then you'd say, okay, they're also going to be great sportsmanship. I mean, incredible integrity, a great role model for kids, right? And then you're going to say they're going to be loyal to the team and obedient to the team. And, you know, they're never going to, you know, cause conflict inside the group. And you would look at all those things and you would put this captain together. You have the absolute wrong kind of leader. So these 16 leaders that I found, they had seven qualities. You mentioned the first one, which was this grunt work and support.
Right.
But the other things were really amazing to me. They had this incredible emotional control, which is not that surprising, but to an extreme. They were able to play through all kinds of things, from having a heart attack on the ice.
Right. Near death in the family.
A father on his deathbed with days to live, and they still played at high levels. So that was there. That's not that surprising. And then the other thing is relentlessness. But this is not the kind of relentlessness that we're used to.
Yeah, just driving
this
forward.
This is way beyond. I mean, it's playing through the most incomprehensible injuries. In fact, there's one in here, which this is a family program, so I can't really get into the details. But this player suffered an injury that 99% of male humans would just crawl into an ambulance immediately. And he continued to play through it. So there's this level of relentlessness. But the things that were really amazing that I never expected, okay, there's several of them, but one of them is speeches. Okay, you think about a captain, the way that someone motivates a team.
Right.
And it's not just in sports, it's in any discipline. You give a speech. You give a big inspirational speech.
Right.
What I discovered was these captains, not one of them liked giving speeches. In fact, some of them never did address the group. They had a different style of communication. It wasn't that they were quiet.
Mm-hmm.
It was that they preferred to talk to their teammates individually and very intensely in short bursts. And they would circulate widely and democratically around the team. It was a different kind of conversation designed to get the whole group talking. And the best examples of this are incredible to me. Yogi Berra.
Right.
Do you think of Yogi Bear as a great communicator? I mean, most
no,
people.
No, I mean, of course, we remember his quotes, but.
Right, but he didn't seem charismatic, no. Right? And Tim Duncan of the San Antonio Spurs is another great example of someone like this. So that really surprised me that this kind of communication that was really effective was different. And there's some others, but one other thing that I thought was I really want to point out was that they were not angels, which really surprised me. I kept finding all these examples of really unsportsmanlike, ugly things they did in competition. And by the same token, they never hesitated to create conflict on the team, to stand up to management, to the coach, to their own team if they thought something was not helping the team win. So they created a lot of problems, and some of them had bad reputations publicly. The thing is, they didn't care, first of all, because they wanted to win, and everything was about winning. But the other thing that was interesting is they're different from other athletes that created problems, because at home, they were homebodies. They really were. I mean, most of them were introverts. They didn't want attention. They weren't celebrities. They didn't really do endorsements. They didn't want that kind of accolades and that kind of affirmation from the world. So never got in trouble, incredibly law-abiding, like perfect citizens off the field. On the field, anything goes. They would break any rule in order to win if they thought they could get away with it.
And we're going to continue to go through this, but my guest this evening is Sam Walker. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Are you applying for Medicaid and need assistance? Are you thinking about putting a loved one in a nursing home and require guidance? Call Senior Planning Services at 516-500-SENIORS or visit senior-planning.com to get the help you need by the professionals you trust. Their expert advice will save you money, time, and frustration. Call 516-500-7364 or visit senior-planning.com. Applying for Medicaid is made simple with Senior Planning Services. Call 516-500-7364. 500-SENIORS. That's 516-500-7364. Or visit senior-planning.com for a free consultation.
Your company website is crucial to your success, providing information about your company to the entire world. Was your website recently updated? Is it mobile friendly? Well, look no further than websitewithbrains.com, the complete website solution. Call Website with Brains today at 718-412-3500. That's 718-412-3500. Or visit websitewithbrains.com.
And we're back. Mind your business with Yitzhak Saftless right here on 77 WABC and around the world at WABCBizRadio.com. My guest this evening is none other than Sam Walker. He is the author of the brand new release, The Captain Class, and he certainly has the authority to write this book. He's covered sports for many, many years, and he actually founded the Wall Street Journal's sports section. So he certainly has the accolades. I also want to give him a thank you and Random House. One lucky winner is going to win a hardcover edition of this book. Everyone else could still be a winner by buying it. It'll be on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, around the world. But one lucky winner is going to win it. All you have to do is send a text to 64600, 64600, and put in the letters MYB for Mind Your Business. That simple. Put in the letters MYB, send it over to 64600. That is our giveaway tonight. Well, I want to continue with Sam going through some of these amazing seven secrets of leadership. The next one, and of course we touched some of them previously, is they broke the rules. And I want to read a quote from the Sunday edition. In competition, they believed that the rules of sport superseded those of polite society. You touched on this before. And that aggressive tactics were a valuable tool. And then you add, not to inflict pain on others, but to further the team's goal. And in business, it's the same way. You know, you can't kill your competitor, but at the same time, you're out to win. So maybe you could explain it. I get that was an incredible rule that you have there. Incredible, yeah, one of the secrets.
This was one of the hardest things for me to unravel because, you know, we're taught from an early age that sportsmanship is crucial and that, you know, you are how you compete. I mean, right. It says a lot about who you are. And I think that's true to an extent, but you know what I found was after really looking at the research, and I looked at a lot of behavioral research to figure this out. And one of the studies that I thought was fascinating, that early studies of aggression just thought all aggression was bad. It was all sort of a negative force. But you know, over time, psychologists have figured out that there are two kinds of aggression. There's a tactical aggression, which they call instrumental aggression, which is something that's done toward the advance of a worthy goal. And then there's hostile aggression, which is when you want to hurt someone. I mean, it's just doing something to inflict punishment. And it took me a long time to figure out that these captains may have done things that looked to most of us like just aggression. And that they must be nasty people. But if you think about it, they were always done in the service of winning. And, you know, some of the things that athletes do on the field that we think are aggression are actual hostile aggression. They're trying to hurt someone. And, you know, one of the great examples from soccer was Zinedine Zidane with the headbutt in the final of the World Cup. I mean, that's hostile aggression. That's not instrumental to hurt his team. But anyway, there were some great examples, and the one I really got into in the book was this Cuban women's volleyball team from the 1990s. No, you've never heard of them, okay? But they're the greatest Olympic team of all time. They were unbeatable for 10 years. They were down, and this is when these captains do this. They were down. They were wheezing. They were running out of gas in 1996 at the Olympics in Atlanta, and they had to play Brazil, which was their arch rival, and they came up with this. The captain of the team came up with this idea. Well, we're just going to insult them across the net. Horrible names. The worst things you can think of. And I can't repeat these. So it was terrible. So they started doing this because they kind of knew they could rattle the Brazilians. And, you know, they did it. They got a couple yellow cards. No one got ejected. And sure enough, by the fifth set, the Brazilians started to overplay. They got upset. They ran out of steam. And they wound up winning and squeaking by. She didn't do this in every match. She knew her team was on the ropes. She wanted to win, and this is what she did. And, you know, the thing about it is this captain, Maria Luis, she's an incredibly gracious, warm, nice person who would never get in trouble, would never do anything like that in polite society. But if it's about an Olympic
strategic
medal, it's time.
Strategic. Yeah. Wow. We touched on this earlier, so we'll just give this a little bit of attention. Here's another one of the seven secrets. They communicated practically, not in grand speeches. And, of course, you spent some time on Yogi Berra.
Right. Yogi Berra is such an underrated communicator. People forget that. You know, he had a very mumbly way of talking. Yeah. He had all the famous yogiisms. And, you know, the idea of him standing up on a box and giving a speech to the team, it's hilarious, right? It would never fly. So, but what people don't realize is that he was never captain of the Yankees. And he's the only person I said who wasn't actually named captain. There was no captain during his time, but it was his team. And the team from 49 to 53, people forget about them because, you know, DiMaggio was on his way out. Mantle was just getting started. But they won five straight World Series. No one's ever done that. That's the greatest team. And this was Yogi's team. And they had substandard talent. By the Yankee standards, it was one of, they weren't even in the top 10 in terms of the talent they had. Yet they won five straight. And the other thing that blows me away is that in one of those seasons, they had 15 different pitchers throw at least 15 innings. They never had a great rotation. They never had the incredible pitching anchors that other teams did. And Yogi was the one who had to manage all of that. Can you imagine 15 different personalities and temperaments? But everyone over and over again who came to the Yankees, they had their best streaks under his tutelage because he talked, he listened, he talked, he was engaged with these guys. He was constantly communicating about what to do. In fact, you know, one of his pitchers, they got so familiar with each other. It was Eddie Lopat. They, at one point, they didn't even need pitch signals.
You mentioned it.
Yogi knew what Lopat was going to throw, and Lopat knew that Yogi knew. So that's the level of communication you rarely see.
My next one is probably my favorite. I guess everyone's allowed to have their favorite, and that is they knew how to use deeds to motivate. Now, of course, hey, what can I tell you? This is great advice for parenting. You know, let's face it. I'm going to read a quote here. The trainers knew, this quote won't make sense if I don't put it in context. You talk about Jack Lambert. I mentioned my example, Curt Schilling. Maybe you could talk about it. They knew how to use that moment and act it out and let that speak for itself. How critical is that?
It's so critical. There were a lot of captains in this sample who may have been talkative, like Jack Lambert of Pittsburgh Steelers. The Steelers had the same kind of ritual. After the game, they would all go to the sauna without the coaches, and Lambert was the first in and the last to leave, and they would give each other brutal critiques of how they had played. And Lambert was his haven. It was where he sort of communicated with the team. But he had another knack for motivation, and in these really physical, aggressive, high-pressure sports like football, I think that's really crucial. So, you know, you remember Lambert missing his teeth, right? John Elway once said he wanted to be an accountant after he saw Lambert line up against him. And he would pump his leg. He looked like a wild man. And, you know, he seemed crazy. And in this game that I talked about, so they started off the season 1-4. Everyone had left them for dead. And it was against Cincinnati. They had to win. And Lambert played one of the finest football games the middle linebackers ever played. He recovered a fumble, interception. He spotted his own team 10 points and had something like 10 solo tackles. So he was a masterpiece of a game. During the game, he had a cut on his hand that had already been there that he'd bandaged up. And the bandages came off, of course, and the cut opened up, and it was spurting blood all over his uniform. I mean, all over it.
Yeah.
And I remembered this, and he was very nonchalant about it, but I tracked down the trainer who was there.
Right, because I'm sure the fans in the stands are saying, take care of the guy.
Wrap the wound. Stop it from spurting blood.
Right.
So the trainer just laughed and said, oh, we wouldn't even have approached him. You know, there's no way, because we knew he was a huge motivator, intimidator. He wanted the blood. He loved having blood on his uniform. So he didn't even think about changing the bandages. But these captains understood that. And, you know, one of the great, I don't know if you want to have some fun on Google, go and Google All Blacks Haka.
Uh-huh.
This is this New Zealand rugby team. You may not know anything about them. They're one of the great dynasties in sports history. But they do this dance before matches, which was inspired by the Maori tribe, which is a native tribe in New Zealand. And it raises the hair on your arms. It's this tribal ritual with this. And this team is one of the great teams in sports history. But they, this captain, Buck Shelford, who is an incredibly tough guy who took over this team and was undefeated for 4 years as captain, he's a Maori descent. And he took this whole team to a Maori college to see it perform correctly. And this became a weapon. And they would do this before games. It got so intimidating to the other teams that in some cases they would actually turn around so it's not they didn't
they
have to see
let it affect
or,
them.
Or they would put their uniforms on and pretend they weren't seeing it.
Wow.
So there's a lot of research that's been done about how our brains are wired to pick up other emotions in other people. And I think these captains understood they could reach their teammates at a deeper level.
The next one is moving along because the time goes very fast when we're on the air like this. It just flies by. Here it is. They were independent thinkers, unafraid to dissent. And of course, in fact, I'm going to read this takeaway. The captains on my list didn't hesitate to let coaches and executives know when they disagreed with them. But their dissent wasn't personal. They understood that conflict, when focused on supporting a team's goal, is not destructive. It's essential. Beautiful.
Thank you. No, that was interesting too, because these guys created a lot of problems and were often creating this sort of clubhouse dramas that were taught.
Maybe you could even share the story there. He got into a fistfight in the back of a plane.
Yeah. So imagine the Soviet Union in 1980 and that hockey team. You remember the Miracle on Ice?
Oh.
Okay. So the Soviet team, this very little known story, they're flying home from the losing to the Americans at Lake Placid. And the coach, Viktor Tikhonov, had told the players, we lost as a team. The story we're going to tell in Moscow is that we all share the blame equally. And that was, you know, what the players wanted.
Right.
And
right.
So he gets in the plane and he's talking to his assistants and he doesn't think anyone can hear him. And he's bashing individual players. This guy, that guy, terrible, awful. And this guy, Valery Vasilyev, who's a defenseman, overhears this. So this is the Soviet Union. And he's sitting next to like guys from the Kremlin. And Vasilyev runs in there, starts choking him, his coach, and threatens to throw him out of the airplane if he doesn't take it back right now. So can you imagine? I mean, they could have sent him to Siberia in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. After that, what you said, it wasn't personal. And what I realized was right after that, he never mentioned the incident. He didn't hold a grudge. He showed up at practice. He did his thing. He continued to help and lead the team. What he had done was about making sure the team could still compete together and win. It wouldn't fall apart. It wasn't a personal attack. And there's so much research I found that shows that there's different kinds of conflict. There's personal conflict is always toxic. But what these captains did, the conflict they created, it was always about the matter at hand. It was about making sure the team was performing at its peak. It wasn't personal. And that was the difference. And that kind of conflict is essential. And I think in business and any other field, you know, you just can't be personal. If it feels like a personal attack, then it's destructive.
My guest this evening, Sam Walker of the Wall Street Journal and of the new release, The Captain Class. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Your company website is crucial to your success, providing information about your company to the entire world. Was your website recently updated? Is it mobile friendly? Well, look no further than websitewithbrains.com, the complete website solution. Call Website with Brains today at 718-412-3500. That's 718-412-3500. Or visit websitewithbrains.com.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saftless right here on 77 WABC and around the world at WABCBizRadio.com. My guest this evening, my special guest, is Sam Walker, the founder or the innovator of the sports section in the Wall Street Journal. He's been at the Wall Street Journal for many years and came out. His brand new release is The Captain Class, the hidden force that creates the world's greatest teams. It's a Penguin release, Random House. They were kind enough to send over. One lucky winner is going to win it. All you have to do is send a text to 64600. Put in the letters MYB for Mind Your Business. That simple. Send over a text to 64600 and put in the letters MYB. One lucky winner is going to get it. But with the precious remaining minutes that we have, I want to plow through and still cover some of the great secrets that you have and the unlikely secrets. Now, one is relentless, and you attack it really good because we all understand relentless wouldn't be an unlikely secret. Relentless is like any great athlete has to be relentless. But you talk about, of course, the famous Bill Russell. And that maybe you could even, I can't say it as good as you, say that story. And, of course, the famous Coleman play.
Yeah, Bill Russell was a rookie in 1956, 57. And he showed up at the Celtics, who had never won a title ever. And they had a great season. They made it to Game 7 of the NBA Finals against the St. Louis Hawks. There's a minute left. And Russell gets a rebound and charges down the court and tries a dunk and misses. Can you imagine? Missed the dunk. They're up by 1 point. So the Hawks execute this quick inbound pass to midcourt, and a forward named Jack Coleman catches the ball. Now, Coleman had a head start. He's in the middle of the court. Russell's underneath his own basket after missing the dunk. So Coleman has a free layup.
Yeah, I mean, basically game over.
Game over.
Well, actually, was going to go into overtime.
Yeah, I mean, but it could have ended right there.
Right.
So Coleman goes up there, makes his layup, and Russell comes out of nowhere and swats the ball away. So he covered 96 feet in 3 seconds, which is the same time it took this guy to run about 45 feet. So you can imagine, but none of his teammates gave chase. He was the only one. And I think that it's called the Coleman play. Everyone thinks it's one of the great defensive efforts in NBA history. And they went on to win their first championship and then to win 11 more over 13 seasons. But the thing about Russell is like just the idea that he would even attempt that play.
Right.
His relentlessness. And his teammates always said he would get sick. He would throw up before every game. And if he didn't throw up, they'd be like, Russell, go to the locker room and throw up because, you know, what's
we're not
wrong
gonna
with
win.
You? But he just had this burning relentlessness, and it's typical of these captains.
The last one here that's listed is they possessed remarkable emotional self-control. And, of course, you talk about the 2009, the final, the world championship. I just want to point out the quotes that I particularly related to. Like my other outstanding captains on my list, Fernandez possessed both selflessness and incredible emotional fortitude. And of course he was dealing with a family situation that a very unfortunate, severe, acute, you know, situation where anyone would be given a pass, quote unquote, and yet it's hard to describe.
Yeah, no, he got a phone call 2 days before the World Championship final, which was the biggest match of his life. He'd just been named captain. And his mother told him his father was dying of cancer and had 3 days tops to live, maybe even less. So he had this terrible decision. I've never seen an athlete have to make a choice like that. Do I play or do I go home? What if I stay? What if we lose? I mean, it was a mess. So not only did he decide to stay and play because he wanted his teammates to see him as a strong leader, he decided not to tell them.
Amazing.
And that's shocking. He didn't say a word. No one knew.
Amazing.
And he played brilliantly and scored the clinching goal in the last minute and then collapsed in tears after the match. And he made it home to see his father, which is a happy ending.
Wow. Yeah.
But you see this over and over. Can you imagine not only playing – just playing, but playing brilliantly in the biggest match of your life with that.
It's sitting in the head. I mean, he's human. It's his father.
That level of control is something that I think all leaders should aspire to.
Wow. Before we get to the takeaway, which we'll still have around 2 minutes for a good takeaway, I want to remind the listeners that the Captain class is available at Barnes & Noble, bookstores nationwide, Amazon, of course. It's called the Captain class. I picked it up and wanted to have the honor of interviewing Sam because of the tweet I had seen from Christine Comerford. It's the Captain class, the hidden force that creates the world's greatest teams, by Sam Walker, who was the founder of the Wall Street Journal's sports section. One lucky winner is going to win it. Special thank you to Sam and the team at Random House. All you have to do is send a text to 64600. Put in the letters MYB for Mind Your Business. And one lucky winner is going to win it. Again, the final reminder about this, 64600. That's the number to text it to. And put in the letters MYB. And one lucky winner is going to win his new book. Sam, I can't thank you enough for the time that we've had. Again, a majority of the listeners of the show are small business owners, medium-sized business owners, entrepreneurs, C-level executives. What final takeaways could you share? And honestly, as I related to, why they should even pick up this book, even though it's based on sports?
You know, I've tried very hard to use research from business and also to put takeaways in there that relate to other kinds of teams. I think any team that performs with any sort of pressure together, is the same. Teams are teams. I mean, mm-hmm. and the dynamics are very similar. So the one takeaway that I think is the most important is that we pick the wrong team leaders, and we don't even know why, and we don't realize why we're doing it. And the takeaway from the book that I found was that the great leaders, not just the ones who were good for a while, it's the ones who can sustain a winning culture, an enduring winning culture. Mm-hmm. They're not the obvious people. In fact, you'd probably be better off looking at your group and thinking, who's the least obvious leader in this group, and starting there, because I think these captains, what they showed me was that they were at the bottom of that range. Many of them were just not people you would ever expect to be leaders because they were volatile, because they weren't talented, because they were water carriers, because they mm-hmm. were quiet and didn't seek attention. These are not people who would wow you in a job interview. These are not people who would blow you away. And in fact, the people who succeed on these teams in many cases, and research supports this, are the people who act like they don't deserve it and really don't think wow. they deserve it. They don't lobby for leadership. They feel it as a responsibility and almost a burden. And if you can find one, it's hard to find. They're not easy. But the good thing is that these seven traits that I've looked at, it's not about skill, God-given skill or talent. It's about behavior. It's about the way you behave. And behavior can be copied and developed. And the fact is, a lot of us can become better leaders, but there may be elite leaders in your midst, and you just don't realize it because Amazing. You're not really, we've never really studied elite teams and how they actually function. So I think there's a lot to ponder there if you're running a business.
Sam, I can't thank you enough for joining me here on Mind Your Business.
Thank you. It's really terrific. Great interview.
Thank you.
Really fun.
Thank you. Well, that wraps up a great edition of Mind Your Business. Again, the Captain Class is available at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, around the world. It's the book, The Hidden Force That Creates the World's Greatest Teams. Well, that wraps up another great edition of Mind Your Business here on 77. Tune in again next Sunday evening at 10 p.m. for another great edition of Mind Your Business right here on 77 WABC.
77 WABC Radio presents Mind Your Business, hosted by founder and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Safliff. Mind Your Business focuses on business and marketing strategies for success. Tune in every Sunday night for this intriguing weekly radio show that's chock full of business insights and marketing strategies that will help you get ahead of the game. Host Yitzhak Safliff has been producing pioneering and creative marketing work for over two decades. He leads a team of marketing experts who help their clients build their brands and grow their businesses. Now, he and his guests offer their business and marketing expertise to you every Sunday night on Mind Your Business.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.